I was a non-traditional student. I already had two children when I went back to school, and I majored in accounting. I took the CPA and CMA exam right when I was finishing school, and I finished first in the country on the CPA exam and first in the world on the CMA exam because it's an international exam.
And now you see why I have her in that celebrity status, first in the nation and first in the world. Say no more. Hey, teammates, welcome to another episode of It's All About the Team. And I'm excited today to have one of the greatest Youngstown State Penguins ever with us, Lori Burles. Welcome, Lori.
Open your mind to who all can be on your team. Communication is huge, and I know you know that. You can't over-communicate.
One of the great lessons you helped your children learn is that you need to be a part of the team.
If somebody believes in you, you're going to step up and do better.
Show me your friends, I'll show you your future. Same thing in the workplace.
Thank you, Jim, and I'm excited to be here, and I don't know about the greatest ever, but that's a pretty high compliment. There's been a lot of great graduates from Youngstown State University.
Thousands of great graduates, but you know, there are some that have had extraordinary moments, extraordinary careers, reflected amazingly on our great school, and have shown people that greatness comes from Youngstown State and a lot of other places. And we'll get into why I think you're in that, you know, that category. Mm-hmm. But what I think is fun whenever we talk with one of our guests, everyone has a whole set of different experiences, different worlds they live in and work in and so forth. And so I like to have you take a quick trip through your career, and then I want to dive back in to what you feel as if you learned from each stage that maybe someone can pick up a nugget that will help them be a better teammate or build their team.
Okay. Well, I have to start my career story with going to Youngstown State, right? Okay. And I was a non-traditional student. I already had two children when I went back to school, and I majored in accounting. And I was, I studied pretty hard. Some people might say I overstudied. But I was, I took the CPA and CMA exam right when I was finishing school. And I finished first in the country on the CPA exam and first in the world on the CMA exam because it's an international exam.
And now you see why I have her in that celebrity status, first in the nation and first in the world. Say no more.
Oh, well, thank you, Jim. But I also say that, that says you know how to take tests, but then you have to go on and actually prove yourself in the real world. And I worked at a small accounting firm in Youngstown, and then I went to Deloitte in Cleveland. And then I I took a job on the East Coast at, it's now Quest Diagnostics. It was Corning Clinical Labs, and that was an interesting job. But then I really wanted to come back to Ohio. And so I worked at Office Max when Office Max was headquartered in Ohio. And I had, I think, maybe four or five different jobs in 4 or 5 years. I got promoted every year that I was there. So I said I made up for the lost time of being a non-traditional student. And then I went on to become CFO at three different large publicly traded companies. And I retired from, the last one was Newmont Mining Company. Two were in Cleveland, Steris and Cleveland Cliffs. Then I went to Colorado at Newmont Mining Company. And now I am retired from full-time work, but I serve on several public company boards and also find a little time to play some tennis and golf and go skiing. So that's my story.
Well, you know, you've been on a lot of different teams.
Yes.
You've had a lot of different teammates. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you can share with us some of the lessons. So let's start with the non-traditional student.
Yes.
Where did you see the team that was built around that student at Youngstown State that maybe was different than the student who came right out of high school? And how did that team help you progress?
Yeah, so obviously my family had to be there. My kids were, they were in school, so they were pretty capable of, and they actually had to learn a lot of things. They would tell you about all the chore lists that I put together. Mm-hmm. And, but my daughter, when she went to college, she said, Mom, my roommates don't even know how to clean a bathroom. So my team, my kids, they learned a lot of things and a lot of things to just take care of everything. And certainly the team at Youngstown State, all the professors were fabulous at helping me through things. And so that's probably the biggest part of my team was my family, especially my kids, and the group at Youngstown State.
Well, one of the great lessons you helped your children learn is that you need to be a part of the team, because mom's got some work to do.
Yes.
She's got to study, and you know, you have to take on some responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so how did you get the opportunity to go to that first job with the small accounting firm?
That was an internship through Youngstown State. It was one of the firms that recruited on campus, Packer Thomas, and they were there, and I got a job there and worked there.
You know, right now I'm really engaged in education and workforce, and we happen in Ohio to have a whole bunch of opportunities with some companies moving in and so forth. And our real challenge is getting that workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk every day to the businesses about, if you'll just get someone in an internship or a co-op.
Absolutely.
And show them what's expected and teach them. And that's hands-on. And
absolutely.
And,
you
know, that is the key, especially.
Yes. And I always found that the students at Youngstown State, they understood the value of work. And if you just get them in the door, it's a fabulous opportunity. And the most important, one of the most important teams, I think, at any university is that group that connects, the career services that connect the students with what's possible and the employers with what's possible. I think that's one of the most important teams you've got at the university.
That's like music to my ears, because we're in a conversation right now statewide.
Yes.
That we've got a couple hundred thousand jobs right now that we need to get good folks to take them. And we're projecting within the next 5 to 7 years of needing about 500,000 more because of some of these companies moving in. Our folks in the state of Ohio, our General Assembly, our leaders, our Jobs Ohio, all of them, they have attracted great opportunities. And we've got to get someone to connect the people to those opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's the magic.
Yeah.
And it sounded like that worked for you. And
it did.
So how long at Packer Thomas?
Actually, I can't remember. That's a long time ago, Jim.
Yeah. I hear you.
But it wasn't real long. And after I passed the exams, then I got the opportunity to go to Deloitte. And, you know, that's one of the big four.
Sure.
So I took that opportunity to advance my career.
So think back to Packer Thomas. Can you think of one lesson you may have learned about becoming a good teammate, because you were just joining and learning from a team? Any good lesson for the viewers?
I think I would say open your mind to who all can be on your team. It's not, you know, if you're young and you're, you know, you don't want to just say, well, I want the people that are fun to be on my team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, make sure the people who've got a lot of life experiences, try to get them on your team, because you're going to learn a lot.
So Deloitte was a big firm.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so as you went on that team, anything jar you as to, hey, this is a different kind of experience and I learned this and this?
They certainly threw me in head first to a lot of things. So I had been, growing up, we were part of a small business. My grandfather started, my dad ran this. So I was part of small businesses. I understood small business very well, but there I was dealing with larger companies, and there's a lot of things that were different, and I was trying to learn really fast. So I had to, again, tap into everybody around me, and they brought me in not as a first year, but like a third year. And so there were a lot of things I didn't learn, so I had to figure out a way to learn them. So I had to reach out to all the people that I could to learn and listen.
Well, reaching out to your teammates is huge, too.
It is.
Right? I mean,
it is.
It's surrounding yourself.
Yes.
I had one of my players always say, show me your friends, I'll show you your future.
Yes.
Same thing in the workplace.
Very, very true. Very true. And at these points, I wasn't the leader of a team. I was trying to build a team, but it was all what how could I help, but how could they help me too?
Did you ever daydream looking at some of the leaders and say, hey, I need to develop some of those traits or qualities or anything you can think of on that side?
Yeah, I think I always looked at people and thought, you know, sometimes you see leaders and managers that are doing things you don't necessarily want right. to emulate.
No question.
But also you see things. And to me, being self-aware is a huge one, because if you, wherever you're at in this process, if you want to build a team, if you think you're the most important team member, you're not going to build a very supportive team. Right. You have to really believe that you need all of your team. And that works, like all the examples I've just been doing, and I know, I'm sure it works for you in sports and so forth, but you've got to really believe you need the rest of your team. Yeah. You can't do it by yourself.
We used to always say that as soon as we realize that we individually are insignificant without everybody else,
yeah.
until we believe that,
yeah.
it's easy to say it, but until you believe it. And so your supervisors, while you were at Deloitte,
mm-hmm.
I won't ask you for the things you learned you wouldn't do later, because I went through the same thing.
Yeah.
I worked for four different head coaches
yes.
for 11 years, and I was studying the heck out of them.
Yes.
And there were some things that to this day I follow.
Yes.
And there are some things that, you know, I chose not. And
yes.
So any highlight of what you learned from some supervisors at Deloitte at a great company like that?
And I think people who recognize your potential and help you find ways to work towards your potential, that's always a really positive thing. It's very positive feedback. It's reinforcing. If somebody believes in you, you're going to step up and do better. And I think that's one real thing that I saw there a lot, where it was people who believed in me. And that made me think I have a lot more potential than I even did, because they believe in me.
You know, a lot of our guests have talked about if they recognized that their supervisor cared about them, which
yes.
same thing,
yes.
believed
yes.
in me, cared
yes.
about me,
yes.
was
yes.
looking after my
yes.
growth, my
yes.
future.
Yeah, you don't want supervisors who just treat you like a number, who, you
yeah.
know, I can replace you in a heartbeat, because you can't in today's world, what you were just saying earlier, Jim,
right.
about jobs.
Yeah, no, it's, there's always been a need for talent.
Yes.
I think there's an even more intense need right now. And so where was Deloitte physically, geographically?
Cleveland.
Oh, so it was in the Cleveland
yes,
office?
Yes, I was in the Cleveland office,
okay.
yes.
Okay, and then you...
Then I took a job on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Yes. And that one, I really didn't want to leave Deloitte. I wasn't there that long, but this particular recruiter was very persistent.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was part of Corning at the time, Corning
okay.
Clinical Labs, which is now Quest Diagnostics, more people would know it as. And I went to work at their corporate office in mergers and acquisitions, and I was part of a small team working for a very senior person. And I was there in the New Jersey area not very long. We did a big acquisition of a privately held lab in the Boston area. So then they asked me to move there and be the controller of that region.
Mm-hmm. So some of my sidekicks in It's All About the Team podcast love to talk about mergers and acquisitions and how that's a different kind of team.
Yes.
Talk about some of the what you saw were effective types of teammates and types of team strategies in that arena.
Yeah. I think that, again, as I was an accounting major and my first world was in accounting and working with and at Deloitte, I'm working with other accountants. When I got into that arena, I had to broaden my team and realize that I had to work very closely with the legal organization. And communication is huge. And I know you know that. Communication,
yep.
you can't over communicate.
Yep.
And when you're doing an acquisition, communicating with the target company once the acquisition is closed, making them feel like part of it and everybody working together. And then when I went to Boston to do that job, well, this was a small privately held company that was, for good reason, used to doing things the way they did mm-hmm. it. Now they were part of a Fortune 200 company.
Mm.
and you have to do things a little bit differently, and you're audited differently. And so helping them understand that, and I had to sometimes call some reinforcements to help me explain. Mm-hmm. And so I made good friends with the head of internal audit at corporate and other people in legal to help me explain some of the things that I needed to help the team there, the new team, understand.
Understanding the why,
mm-hmm.
Is why you need so much communication.
Right.
Because we used to always talk about, we knew our students had certain things going on in their minds, and until we could explain to them why we were doing what we were doing, they still had those same things in their minds. And I'm sure the same is true with so in a merger and acquisition, does the acquired company, was it their idea? Was it their goal? How does that
be acquired?
Yeah, to be acquired.
It was a mutually beneficial thing.
Okay.
This was a privately held company, so the owner was getting to the point where he was ready to retire and mm-hmm. and live a good life mm-hmm. and relax mm-hmm. a little bit. So mm-hmm. he was ready to sell his business, and it was a region where we didn't have much operations. So it was a great opportunity for everybody to do that together. So that worked out. But to your point, the why is so important. And later in my career, doing acquisitions in Europe, for example, they do things differently. In the U.S., large corporate, we've got a lot of new rules and regulations, and they change all the time. And I was a CFO when Sarbanes-Oxley was first implemented, which is a lot of work that doesn't make sense if you don't understand the why and mm-hmm. how it evolved. And this is part of what we have to do if we're a U.S. publicly traded company. And so helping people understand, I'm not just making up this work just
right.
to create work for
right,
people.
Right.
It's something that we have to do. So you just got to help people understand the why.
So you mentioned it's a little different in Europe. Are teams different in Europe, or are the same? Is there anything we can learn from that European model as it relates to teams?
I mean, I think people are people everywhere,
mm-hmm.
and people need the same kind of support and teamwork everywhere. It's more the laws and regulations that are
okay.
a little bit different from place to place, I think. And in Europe, we have to be a little bit sensitive in understanding that they have a culture. Mm-hmm. And we use the word Europe, but it's really a lot of different countries, and they mm-hmm. aren't all one country, one group of people. You need to understand, and that translates to any team, right? You have to understand where they came from. And when
yep.
you bring a new class of recruits into a football team,
yep.
some of them came from Ohio, but some of them, it's their first time maybe leaving Texas or
right.
something.
That's right.
So you got to understand where people came from and what their background is to help them adjust and be part of the team.
And you want them to spend the time together so
yes.
that they realize, hey, that guy from here or there is no different than me. And
right.
And
that's a really important point with teams. I think it's important not to just show up and do the work and go home. You have to find ways to help your team spend maybe a little bit of casual time together, you
yep.
know, go out for lunch or
yep.
breakfast, or just play, you know, if you're a football player, play a game of basketball,
mm-hmm.
you know, just
sure.
with my tennis team, we just try to do some fun things and just to build that feeling of team and I got your back. It's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot harder to let someone down if you know them personally than it is if all you do is send them emails and texts. You can let someone down if that's all you do.
Right. Well, do you think during this period where we had to respond to the pandemic?
Yes.
And then all of a sudden we weren't together as much. In your world, I don't want to jump all the way to your boards, but you still are on top of what's
yeah.
going on out there. How do you think that has affected things, and do you think we're getting back to spending a little more time together?
I do think it affected people a lot. I mean, and I saw my granddaughter have middle school all remotely, and my youngest nephew went to college and then just got sent home. And I do think it affected people in their ability to really connect as human mm-hmm. beings. And I know everybody has appreciated the working remotely, but I think mm-hmm. people do lose a little bit. And I, and not to jump ahead to my boards, but once you really have a connection, again, we'll go back to that point about figuring out how to make a connection.
Right.
If you have a connection with someone, then it's easier to do some follow-up on a remote basis.
Right.
But if all you ever have, I'll, yep. you know, go back to my other point. If all you ever have are texts and emails yeah. and a Zoom phone call, you don't have that water cooler conversation about finding out that their child is sick or they're right. dealing with a parent who's ill or whatever those things are. And you don't develop that same connection as a team. You don't feel like you have each other's back or you need to have each other's back.
So you were on the East Coast there for a while.
Yes.
Got a little homesick for Ohio.
Yes, yes, yes.
So then back to Office Max.
Yes, I went back. I went to Office Max then.
Okay. So who you went to work with, any thoughts back from then as to what else you learned about being a good teammate or building a team?
So I actually learned a lot at Office Max. That was the first time I was really a team leader. And I also had different, I had two different bosses and I learned a lot of different things from the two of them because it was my first time with that kind of a role in the finance and accounting world. And building my team and figuring out who's gonna, you know, sometimes some people don't make it on the yep. team and you've got to deal yep. with that. And that's hard. And I had to yep. deal with that for the first time. But then I had some people who were really awesome and I took them along with me to my next job. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of thing. And the two different bosses that I had were both excellent, but completely different personalities. So that was kind of interesting to see that. And the first one was more, I would say, task oriented. And mm-hmm. we did all the tasks and I learned, you know, got to get all these tasks done. And I mean, it was a connected relationship, but it was a little more task. The second person was more strategic and, you know, mm-hmm. go into his office and, okay, I need to get to work because we'd be talking about
right.
all kinds of things, far ranging things. So it was interesting just having the two different bosses and building my team.
So as you were kind of moving along the continuum of experiences and moving up the ladder.
Yeah.
Was there ever anything that impressed your coworkers that, hey, this person, you know, kind of went the non-traditional role, kind of the hard role, and I appreciate her more, or vice versa? Like, oh, doesn't have the pedigree of whatever. But did that ever come up?
And that's where it comes back to, I think I'm proud of what I did on those exams. I'm proud of going to Youngstown State. But when people just hear about you and they kind of take a fact and they make an assumption, there was one person at Office Max, one of my team members. He was actually on his honeymoon my first week, and he had heard about me. And he told his new wife, well, I'm not going to like working for this person. I'm just not. I mean, she sounds too, too much, too studious and somebody I don't really want to work for. And as soon as I get back, I'm going to start looking for a new job. That person became my right hand.
Wow.
Went with me to my next job and has been a friend now for 30, 35 years.
Yeah.
Because he learned what I was really about.
Right.
We spent the time to figure out what each other were really about and not just, you know, I passed a couple of exams, so
right.
I must study a lot and do nothing else.
Hey, teammates. I want to tell you about a project we're working on with Youngstown State University. One of the ways Ellen and I have decided to give back is through the Trestle Institute for Leadership and Teamwork. We've collected a set of successful business and nonprofit leaders to serve as guest servant leaders in partnership with the Sokolov Honors College to teach university students teamwork, leadership, and personal skills. We teach from a foundation built on gratitude, excellence, hope, love, and selflessness. If you're a young person or parent helping to search for a unique college experience, you can learn more at trestleinstitute.ysu.edu or ysu.edu. Links will be provided in the show notes.
Well, that just reinforces, though, that communication, that connectivity, yeah. that willingness to learn about your teammate.
Right, exactly.
Is so critical.
Yes.
And not, mm-hmm. you know, not hear about them or someone told you their reputation,
right.
so you assume.
Yeah,
that,
you got to get to know the person, right? Actually the person, not just assume what they're like.
And so Office Max was a decent length of time,
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah.
And so you moved from there to
Steris, and that was my first CFO role.
So stayed in Northeast
yeah,
Ohio.
Mm-hmm. That was my first CFO role at Steris, yes.
So the finance part of things, so while I was president at Youngstown State, was really the first time I worked with the finance people, because mm-hmm. back when you're a coach, they just tell you, this is what you have, and
yeah.
you know, be happy
yes.
or whatever. But to see the dynamics of trying to build a team in a finance office
mm-hmm.
who everyone, you know, wants more budget and everyone,
yes.
any dynamics about building a team on the finance side?
Yeah, the most important thing that I always told my finance teams was you need to understand the business. Because if you understand the business, then you're going to work well with all the other functions. If you just want to be a finance person who tells the coach, no, you can't have any more
right,
money,
right.
you're not going to be successful. You're not going to grow in your career. You want to build, you want to have those connections. You want to feel like you have teammates all throughout the organization. Because, and especially, I mean, in a publicly traded company, you're telling investors, here's how much money we're going to make this year. And if you don't have the right relationships and connections and teams within the organization, you might be giving investors bad information mm. because people aren't trusting you and giving you the full story.
You know, I enjoyed our CFO at Youngstown State. I used to always tease him that no matter what you asked him, the answer was no to start with.
Yes.
And that you needed to prove, mm-hmm. you know, how it would affect. In
right.
our case, our business was education.
Yes.
What I found was pretty cool about a good one like him, and I haven't had that. I've only had one CFO, so
yes.
I don't have much experience. But he wasn't the kind of guy that, well, if somebody came to him, someone had his ear, so they got everything.
Yeah, no, that's not
because,
good.
Because I don't know how you could build a team in your finance area if all of a sudden it became who knows who or...
Yeah, no, that's not good. But you have to build the connection. For example, people are telling you what they think the sales numbers, what they're going to sell. And so you're thinking, you're planning based on that much revenue. And you want to get an early warning if something's going wrong, that revenue's not going to be what you think it's going to be. So that's where you have to have an extended team and have those connections to really understand where the business is going.
I found ours to be interesting because we really only had two sales days. It was the enrollment in the fall
yeah.
and the enrollment in the
yes.
spring. Yet you had to create your budget.
Right.
Which one thing I thought our guy did very well and his staff was helping us understand that a budget is a planning document
mm-hmm.
and that you need to make sure that, okay, in August, we're going to know if our plan is on target. If not, you're going to need to,
yeah,
you know, make some decisions. So communication
yes.
still goes back to that.
It goes back to communication, absolutely.
And so mm-hmm. how long then at...
How long was I at Steris?
Steris?
Probably 4 or 5 years.
So because you were in the business community
mm-hmm.
in Northeast Ohio, anything that you could talk to us about how the business community worked as a team on behalf of the region
mm-hmm.
and the state? Because again, in my new little world here, we're trying to figure out,
yes,
you know, every region of our state has different needs, mm-hmm, and really needs to work well together so that all these great opportunities we're having, you know, we meet the mark. Anything you can think about the team building in the Cleveland area that you learned?
I think the Cleveland area is very strong in terms of the business community and the connections that people have. And I met various people that I know to this day through being a CFO at two different companies there. And there's groups, there's CFOs that get together and share ideas. And there's definitely a strong belief in the value of Northeast Ohio, which I'm not sure everybody outside Northeast Ohio really understands. And so bringing people back, and I always found that I could hire some of the best. If I was having for a very specialized job, I'm recruiting outside of Ohio. If it's someone who has roots in Ohio, it's not hard to get them to come back.
Right.
If it's someone who's used to the, you know, beaches in California, mm-hmm, and have never visited Ohio, it's a little harder to convince them how great Ohio is.
So give us some guidance. We are going to have, and we're just working right now on all the data with all the projections for these new companies and their needs, accountants and engineers and HR people and communications people, not to mention their technicians and the people working at every level. Jobs Ohio uses this phrase, find your Ohio, uh-huh, which is their thing to the people outside of Ohio, you know, to find your Ohio. What would you, if you had your 30-second elevator pitch as to why it would be great to come as an accountant, with all these new opportunities to come to Ohio and you'd never been here?
If you have a family, you're not going to find a better cost of living housing opportunity than Ohio. Mm-hmm. You have fabulous medical care. You have world-class orchestra. And Playhouse Square is the largest theater district outside of New York.
Yep.
And so there's just a lot of great things. Sporting events are great. And I mean, this year the Cavs are doing fabulous.
That's right. They're rolling.
So there's a lot to like. And you just have to get people. And it's a very welcoming area. People are welcoming. And that's a really big positive, too. That was more than 30 seconds. No, but that, there's a lot to like.
You know, there's
like
a lot to like. And we always felt at Youngstown State, and I always felt at Ohio State, once you got someone to visit and they could feel it,
yes,
but we've got to find a way to get them to visit.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
And I think with some of these new opportunities we have, we're going to get more people to visit, mm-hmm, and maybe find their Ohio.
Yes, yes, yes. And I think that housing is really, really a valuable ticket to that, because I look at, now I'm in Florida and my last job was in Colorado, and I look at the cost of living in those places and it's very, very high.
Yep, no question. So teams of boards are very different. I learned as a college president that my 9-person board was really going to be the key to our success.
Yes.
Because, you know, they could give us a lot of expertise.
Mm-hmm.
They could point us in the right direction. They could resolve that we do these certain things. They just meant so much.
Yes.
And it was interesting over my 8.7 years as president, not that I counted, watching the dynamics and the growth of a good board. In fact, our board, I think forget what year it was one of the national boards of the year in higher education, which, it was so important for us. As you think about your, on 3 or 4 boards, anything that you've learned about what it takes to be a good teammate on a board or what a good board team looks like?
Yeah, that's a great question. And board teams are very different than any of the other teams because you really are a collection of equals. But generally speaking, almost everybody who's on a board has risen to a level, you know, a CFO, a CEO, so they've been in charge. Mm-hmm. And you're not in charge anymore. You have to work as a whole group, and collective decision-making is not easy. You ask, you get a group of eight people together and say, where do you want to go to dinner? And you're going to get eight different answers.
Right.
So learning to say we're all equal, even though we've all been very successful leaders, but we're all equal and we all have to work together for the best, whether it's the university or the company you're working, you got to have your eye on, we're working for what's best for that organization. And that's what a really good board team member does, is they know that the organization is above whatever they might want. And so it's the recruiting, adding new board members is a very tricky thing, because you are looking for a variety of skill sets. You don't want a board of all former CFOs, but you don't want a board with no former CFOs.
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to get the right skill set, but you also want people who really understand and believe. And as we talked about earlier, saying something or understanding it isn't the same as truly believing it. And so you need people who really believe that I'm here to do this collective good and for the organization. And one of my boards, that the last one that I joined, I actually joined it during COVID. So I didn't meet anybody for a year and a half.
Hmm.
And it was challenging. And we finally met, and it felt completely different after I actually met all the people. I'd done a bunch of Zoom calls and some individual calls, Zoom board calls, but it felt completely different. I really felt part of the team then after I met them. They were very nice to me over the phone and everything, but
right.
it's not the same.
Right.
And so then I really felt part of the team after that. So that kind of goes back to another point.
What are the variances of sizes of boards you're on?
They're really run basically 9 to 12 or 13 yeah. people. So they're about that size.
So I've joined the Baldwin Wallace board, which mm-hmm. is 40.
Yeah, that's a little different.
And that's a different dynamic.
Yes.
It further reminds you that communication is important, because
right.
now more people have to hear
right.
the same thing, or at least understand. I'm working with the Ohio Workforce Transformation Board,
uh-huh.
which is another one that statutorily has to be a certain size, because it's a federal mandates and so forth. And it's like in the low 40s. And what I found interesting about our YSU board, this Baldwin Wallace board, the Workforce Transformation Board, it's made up of busy people.
Yes.
And so to get everyone together at the same time, to get everyone to keep up with the information
yes.
they need, so that when they're weighing in.
Right.
But as you said, it's a whole different kind of team building. But what I thought as a college president I needed to do to make that team have a chance is for me to make sure I informed and communicated and gave them all the information, as opposed to giving them selective information, which can happen.
Yes.
Right? And so effective board teams, I think you could have an entire episode with like four or five different board
yes.
because, and it's the key.
Yeah, it really is. And I can't imagine how difficult it is with 40 people to make that work, because you almost naturally are going to have subsets that kind of
right.
know each other or communicate
right.
or something. When we have the size I was talking about, you get everybody around the table, you share, and everybody has equal information.
Right.
And the point you made about communication and information, the boards I've been on, the number one thing that would cause people to not be happy is if they felt there was selective communication,
right.
selective sharing of information.
Right.
So you need to share everything, the good and the bad and the ugly.
Well, you know, I've seen, I won't name names, but I've seen board situations where the administration comes in and drops a stack of something this with an hour before the meeting, and then just, you know.
No.
And there's not going to be a good outcome there. And
no.
One of the reason I asked you about the size boards is because I was just having a conversation with a couple of folks on our Ohio Workforce Transformation Board that had they ever had like an executive committee of the board mm-hmm. that could maybe do some work yes. so that when the 40 got together, we
right.
we had a little better flow of information. And
we do that. Yeah, all of my boards have committees, and the committee would be tasked with managing a certain process. Maybe it's compensation or audit, and then report back you still have to report back to the full board, but right. sometimes you can have a working committee, and those are usually standing committees, but there's been other special committees for reasons, going back to our acquisitions conversation, maybe something like that. But to have a working group that can be more efficient and effective, but you still have to share with everybody and make them feel part of the process. If they tell them, we've already decided all this, then they don't feel part of the process. And having people feel part of the process yeah. is a huge point about feeling like you're a member of the team.
Well, I love the phrase efficient and effective, because we've been using that to get people to understand why.
Yes.
Because we need to be efficient.
Yeah.
In the government now with the people's money.
Yes.
I mean, we need to be as efficient as we can.
Absolutely.
And we need to be effective. The yes. programs we're doing, they have to affect people. They have to make a difference for people. They have to give them opportunity. And so that's my favorite phrase in the world.
And, you know, and Jim, that's one of the reasons why every conversation you and I've ever had about Youngstown State University is using the money that's there efficiently and effectively. Yeah. Yeah. And I really like that about the
yeah.
university.
Yeah, no, that's so critical. And so I told you this was going to be fun. This was going to be easy. So I'm going to leave you with one last opportunity for our viewers. If you had to pick your three favorite words.
Oh my.
Okay, this is just kind of a rapid fire kind of thing. Okay, your three favorite words that you think about in building a team.
Communication.
I knew you were going to say that one. But it's so true.
Can I just say that three times?
No, that is so true. Communication.
Believing. How's that one? Okay, now I need to come up with one more. Sharing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sharing information.
Sharing experiences. Sharing experiences is kind of where it was mostly in my head there.
And what I thought just from listening to you for this 45 minutes or whatever is you want to get to know mm-hmm. your people.
Yes. You said one word, so okay. It's hard for me to give it
I know, right. But you want to yes. have that awareness.
Yes. Of, a personal connection.
Yeah, of who they are.
Yes.
What they need to do for the team.
Mm-hmm.
And I also felt from you, and a couple of my other favorite words is that there's a compassion mm-hmm. you have for
yes.
someone's role or someone's situation.
Yes.
Maybe that's what someone from a non-traditional, mm-hmm. you know, because let's face it, you had to climb a ladder that was mm-hmm. different than many.
Yeah.
And so, all right, let me go back to my three words then. Communication, uh-huh. sharing, and believing.
Yeah.
Pretty darn good.
Yeah.
See, I told you you're one of our YSU celebrities.
Thank you, Jim.
This was awesome. And until the next time, remember, it's all about the team.